Hello and welcome to the next installment of the DVD Marquee on HDF Radio, sponsored by the Home Theater Forum in collaboration with iCraveDVD.com. My name is Shane McDonald and I'll be your host this week, and returning after a short hiatus is Jeffrey Rosato. Welcome back, Jeffrey.
Shane, it's great to be back with you. Thank you so much, and hello everybody out there.
On the third installment of the DVD Marquee, we have quite a few previews for you folks out there, and to get things started, here's Jeffrey.
Thank you, Shane, and our first DVD of the show is for ABC's smash hit medical drama, Grey's Anatomy, whose first season has just been released as a two-disc DVD. Now, on March 27th of 2005, ABC premiered a brand new medical drama called Grey's Anatomy. It was one of the Alphabet Network's mid-season offerings, usually designed to be temporary placeholders for established hits. And that was the case here, as this show came in to give Boston Legal a six-week break to stockpile new episodes for May sweeps. Now, as a general rule, the batting averages of many a mid-season replacement show is not very impressive. More often than not, they're either rejects that didn't make the cut for fall premiere time, or sacrificial lambs designed for eventual cancellations, or in some cases, complete series DVD box sets that won't do anything to salvage anything. Exceeding ABC's wildest expectations, Grey's ratings were practically tripling the numbers that Boston Legal had been getting. And within weeks, the network announced that the show would be extended through May sweeps. And in another savvy mood, four additional episodes that were originally slated to air over the summer were stockpiled and saved for its second season launch, which gave the Grey's creative team more time to tinker with them, which has only made this incredible show even stronger during a period when most shows suffered the dreaded sophomore jinx. Desperate Housewives, anyone? And speaking of the ladies of Wisteria Lane, our favorite interns at Seattle Grace have been outjoying them ratings-wise for the last 2 weeks running. Talk about great timing from the folks at Buena Vista Home Entertainment. In less than 48 hours after a classic cliffhanger of an episode 10 times more exciting than the Super Bowl that preceded, Season 1 of Grey's Anatomy arrives on DVD. For those who may have jumped on the bandwagon over the course of the last 3 weeks, these 9 episodes takes us back to that first day when Meredith, George, Izzy, Alex, and Christina all arrived to begin their internships under the watchful eyes of Dr. Bailey and Dr. Burke. And speaking of Meredith, how shocked was she when that cute guy she took home for an overnight plane turned out to be a co-worker? And another of Dr. Dat, Dr. Shepherd, or also known as Shane, I can't say this. Can you say it for me?
Oh, you're talking about Dr. McDreamy. Sure hope my wife doesn't listen to this.
Hopefully she won't either. Anyway, since I've been a fan of medical shows going all the way back to the days of Marcus Welby, MD. Sorry, I thought that was funny. I'm sorry. I took to Grey's like a good and model patient. Although most of the show's buzz and press is centered around the various romantic couplings of the characters, it also scores big points for me in its medical storylines that always manage to hit the right tones, whether it be about a patient with a tumor the size of New Jersey, or a psychic patient who seems to know more about the interns than they know about themselves. And what a cast. There's not a weak link in the bunch, but I must confess a major crush to star Ellen Pompeo, who's the prettiest girl to don scrubs since China Beach's Dana Delaney. You know, let me just say that after Sunday night's most recent episode that aired around the time of this podcast production, oh yeah, I want to be Dr. George O'Malley. Speaking of which, he's great too, played by the wonderful T.R. Knight. In fact, let me just keep on going. Sandra Oh brings spice and spunk to Christina. Justin Chambers is bad boy perfection as Alex. Katherine Heigl is Izzy, the most sensitive of the bunch. Comeback kid himself, Patrick Dempsey, following up the superb work he did on Once Again as, yes, your turn,
Dr. McDreamy.
I'll just go ahead and call him Dr. McDreamboat with a cherry on top. And last but not least, the dynamic, ever-watchful duo of Isaiah Washington and Chandra Wilson as Drs. Burke and Bailey. Sounds like a good name for a law firm, huh? Speaking of the so-called Nancy, check out this clip that personifies her character from day one.
That's the Nazi?
I thought the Nazi would be a guy.
I thought the Nazi would be a Nazi.
Maybe it's professional jealousy. Maybe she's brilliant and they call her a Nazi because they're jealous. Maybe she's nice.
Let me guess, you're the model.
Hi, I'm Isabel Stevens, but everyone calls me Izzy.
I have 5 rules. Memorize them. Rule number 1, don't bother sucking up. I already hate you. That's not going to change. Trauma protocol, phoneless pagers. Nurses will page you. You answer every page at a run. A run! That's rule number 2. Your first shift starts now and lasts 48 hours. Your interns, grunts, nobodies, bottom of the surgical food chain. You run labs, write orders, work every second night until you drop, and don't complain. On call rooms, attendings hog them, sleep when you can, where you can, which brings me to rule number 3. If I'm sleeping, don't wake me unless your patient is actually dying. Rule number 4, the dying patient better not be dead when I get there. Not only will you have killed someone, you would have woke me for no good reason. We clear? Yes.
You said 5 rules. That was only 4.
Rule number 5, when I move, you move.
Now, if this woman does not get an Emmy nomination for her work in progress, there's got to be something wrong. Love her. And despite only a smattering of extras, I love this double disc set. Shane, what did you think about it? I know you were a newcomer to the show. You've never seen it before. How did you like it?
Well, Jeffrey, at first glance, I would call Grey's Anatomy a more serious version of Scrubs. But instead of laughing at the characters, you begin to care for them and you laugh with them. Jeffrey, you're dead on about the cast. Canadian-born and multiple Canadian Award winner Sandra Oh brought home an Emmy for her role as Dr. Yang. The dynamic between the cast is awesome, and I was shocked to find out they didn't have anyone in mind for any of these roles. The only thing that saddens me about this release is the fact that Buena Vista waited until the middle of Season 2 to release it. I would have loved to have gotten my grubby little hands on it just before the start of the second season, just for the simple fact I can't get enough of this show. It's awesome.
Yeah, it's really gone on to become a sensation all its own, and like I said just a few minutes ago, it's outdrawing Desperate Housewives. I mean, whoever would have thought that? And as a matter of fact, the last couple of Thursdays, they have re-ran the previous 2 Grey's Anatomy episodes to kind of capitalize on that audience, and I think they're kind of giving them a dress rehearsal or possibly changing time slots. But I would hate to break up this dynamic duo because I've become so used to it. But when you've got a hit, if you want it to anchor another night of TV, then why not? But it's a great program, and I think that Buena Vista did a great job with this 2-disc set. The transfers are excellent. They're just almost as good as the high-definition earrings. I couldn't pick out any single artifact, but you have the same feelings as I did. Now, it's a very talky show, we all know that, but there is a lot of, I'd say, alternative rock that makes the soundtrack, and it sounds great in 5.1. Had a lot of nice bottom end to it, a lot of presence, but that's about the only significant thing about the 5.1 track, unless there's something else you want to add.
There's not really much to add to that, Jeffrey. You covered all the bases there. The only thing that I would have said is that the music, even though at some point it's playing while characters are talking, it never interferes. Your voices always come through crystal clear. You couldn't ask for better quality 5.1 from a TV show.
The only thing that I was disappointed in on this channel, just a small lack of extras, but, you know, you got to remember this is a show that just started. First season was only 9 episodes, or at least the 9 episodes that aired prior to the start of the summertime. And, you know, if this show continues to thrive in the ratings, they've got to save some stuff for, you know, future season box sets. So when you take it in that aspect, I guess it's okay.
It was okay, and the thing that I did like is the extras they did include, despite there being so few, was that they were enjoyable to watch, and they did add some value to the show itself.
One thing I couldn't help but notice is how much extra material that didn't make the pilot episode, and there's a feature on here called The Toughest Cuts from the Pilot Episode. Any thoughts on that?
Well, things usually hit the floor for a certain reason, and in this case, the ones that they did cut I thought were well cut, otherwise they would have ruined some of the characters further on.
You know, it's very interesting for somebody that's watched the show from day one to kind of go back to the pilot and see just how green the characters all were and how much they've grown in some 20 episodes in. I mean, George getting all freaked out with Izzy walking into their shower bedroom, and contrast that with... Now, I know you haven't seen it, Shane. I'm not going to spoil it for you, but for those of you that did watch the infamous Super Bowl episode, you'll know that George's fantasy life has kind of taken a quantum leap, and he's kind of gotten over the don't come into the bathroom when I'm using the bathroom mentality, I'll put it that way.
Well, you could kind of tell that George's character arc was going in that direction, so I don't think he really ruined anything for me on that one.
Shane, I gotta ask you what you thought of that avant-garde trailer. What were your thoughts on that?
Well, being from Canada, I do speak a little French, so c'était pas un problème pour moi de parler français.
It was very well put together, and I think they kind of in mock French, or maybe it's the way you spell responsibility in French. You know, I like the way they gave credits to the people who put that little montage together. But it was very funny and just a very cute extra, to me it was. Now there are two commentary tracks, and unfortunately they're just for one episode, but it's the pilot episode, very pivotal episode of that. And it's to me it was a very pleasant, fun, laid back, driven mainly by Katherine Heigl and T.R. Knight. First they don't really know what to say, and you're thinking, oh, this is going to be promising, but then they start riffing on everything from his haircut at the time to continuity woes. Sandra didn't get there until like the middle of the commentary because she was busy filming, you know. Talk about way to go scheduling department. The commentary with producer Shonda Rhimes and director Peter Horton, it was equally as laid back, and there was a little bit more in terms of information that I think the fans will find interesting, like the original actor for the part of Alex. They changed it after they filmed the pilot episode. Probably the most interesting thing that came out of the commentary for me was Sandra Oh auditioning for the part of Bailey, but then she wanted to play Christina. And, you know, it's actually kind of hard to imagine anybody else in the role of Christina other than Sandra Oh, and I guess the same could be said for Chandru Wilson as Bailey.
It is hard to believe anybody else in those roles, and I think it would have been a mistake, personally, had Sandra Oh ended up in the role of Dr. Bailey. I mean, Sandra and Chandra bring so much to their characters that it is really hard to picture somebody else playing those parts.
And she is from Canada, right? Did you mention that earlier?
Yep, she's from Ottawa.
As a matter of fact, you know, we're going to be talking a little bit later about a David Cronenberg film that I know a lot of people are looking forward to, and a big surprise for those of you out there listening, so stay tuned. Well, Shane, I'm going to turn it over to you, and you've got a very interesting Nicolas Cage movie that sounds like it might be one of his best roles to date.
Well, this is back-to-back films to appear on the DVD marquee that stars Nicolas Cage. This time it's The Weatherman, and it also stars the amazing Michael Caine and is directed by Gore Verbinski. This dark comedy has a few uproarious moments, but overall it was a little flat, I found. I'm not saying anything against Cage's performance. He does draw you into the spiral of depression that his character David Spritz is heading down. You start feeling for him, and then, you know, you just wish something would go his way. Michael Caine has some great chemistry with Cage. They play father and son in the movie, and I did find that they acted like they were trying to force the conversation, like between a father and son that are a little bit distant. Now, the best part of Weatherman, in my opinion, is the dialogue. Screenwriter Steve Conrad's writing style captures the way what I'd say is normal people, if you will, speak and think. And just have a listen to this clip and you'll hear exactly what I mean.
You always have to listen to what I'm saying to you!
I heard you! Carter sauce!
Tartar sauce. Man, I'd like to put my face in there. Right in there. Tartar sauce. My hips are cold. Tartar sauce. That's when you know it's cold. I like eating pussy. Tartar sauce. A lot of guys don't. Well, maybe they do. Maybe that's just black guys. Tartar sauce. What happened to the guy who was trying to go around the world in a balloon? Did he make it? I should put some espionage or stolen plutonium in my novel, Tartar Sauce. Spice it up, Neil Young. Fuck, it's cold. Neil Young. Why am I thinking about Neil Young? Neil Diamond. Neil. There's not a lot of famous Neils. Is this Wednesday? I wish I had two dicks. I thought the whole family was going to learn Spanish together this year. That never really happened. I haven't had a Spanish omelet in a long time. There we go.
Unfortunately, visually, the film does fall a little flat in many instances.
And in what way?
The reason for this is the director used cool color palettes to help capture the mood, but it made the clarity an issue in some scenes. The notorious Edge Enhancement also rears its head from time to time, and some of the color detail is lost in the blacks during the darker scenes. On a more positive note, though, the audio track is a little bit better. Although it is mostly dialogue-driven, it does use the system properly for this type of movie. The soundtrack seemed to be the only thing to take full advantage of all the speakers, though.
So did it come with a DTS or just a Dolby Digital 5.1?
Yeah, Jeffrey, they only included a Dolby Digital 5.1 track, which is a little unfortunate. DTS seems in most cases to always be better. Now, the bonus material that's included on this DVD shows pretty much how the entire film came together. There's an extended look at the script process, how Nicolas Cage prepared for his role as a weatherman, and even they have some interviews from a real weatherman. The look of the film, the characters, and last but not least, they have a documentary on how it all came together, the scripting, the casting, the works.
So basically, it was kind of a hit and miss movie. Is that the vibe that I'm getting from you? By the way, I did not get a copy of this, and hopefully in the future we're both going to be able to see the same movies and be able to do the give and take like we normally do. But I'm just basically playing interviewer here. So I guess what you're saying here, Shane, is that Nicholas has struck out twice in a row.
I wouldn't say that he struck out twice in a row. I mean, they are good movies. They're just not for mainstream audiences. I think The Weatherman is something that you're going to have to watch and decide for yourself if it's something that you would enjoy or not. Well, Jeffrey, we're going to turn things back over to you for a title that came out on the 21st of February. It's a 1969 Oscar winner, and that movie is Midnight Cowboy.
Right you are, Shane. You know, back last fall, when all the buzz and controversy about Brokeback Mountain started whip-a-whirling around the media, I couldn't help thinking about another movie from 37 years back involving a cowboy, which stirred up similar firestorms. Of course, you big-time cinema buffs know I'm talking about Midnight Cowboy, the 1969 drama that, despite its initial X rating, went on to win the Oscar for Best Picture that year. With its groundbreaking use in areas of editing, storytelling, shocking language, and, for its time, very adventurous sexual content, it's rightfully earned its place in cinema history. But what transcends its age and still makes it a must-see, even for the audiences of today, is the two characters at the heart of the story, who, despite their vast differences, form an unlikely friendship under harrowing circumstances. John Voight plays Joe Buck, a good old Texas boy leaving the Lone Star State and heading to the big town, New York City, with a goal of being the ultimate male escort to those Big Apple rich ladies. After all, in his words, he is one hell of a stud. But in less than 24 hours after stepping off the bus, he's penniless, and in pursuit of the con man, his promise of management by a fellow contact went horribly wrong.
The stylish furniture from
Spain. Come on now, don't kick me. Come on now. Come on, I'm a cripple.
I ain't gonna kick you.
Come on now.
I'm gonna strangle you to death.
Now, wait a minute.
Only first I'm gonna shake you out right here now. Where's my money?
Here.
You put it right there, boy.
All right. All right, here. Here, that's all I got. Here, that's it.
That's all you got? What you got in your socks?
Nothing. I swear to God. I swear on my mother's eyes. Here, nothing. Here, 64 cents. Go ahead. Come on, I want you to have it.
Sticky wood, you do slobber on it.
Here, have a cigarette. Come on. Come on. Come on, sit down. How do you like that old Daniel flipping out like that? You know, I tried to get in touch with you when I heard, but I was laid up with this cold.
Are you on some free medical advice? You just keep your damn mouth shut about that night.
Right, fine, okay. Fine, okay. Another subject. Where are you living at? You still at the hotel?
What am I doing talking to you, damn it?
Hey, come on!
In only his third film, Dustin Hoffman proved he was no acting flash in the pan as Rico Rizzo, better known to his fellow hustlers and competitors as Ratso. But he'd really prefer it if we called him Rico. I have a feeling he watched Little Caesar with Edward G. Robinson quite a bit as a kid. But anyway, Voight and Hoffman's chemistry is still potent, and thanks to Sony Pictures Home Entertainment, we're able to relive John Schlesinger's 1969 masterpiece in a brand new two-disc package that improves on MGM's original release in more ways than one. First and foremost, it's finally in anamorphic form. Secondly, there's a commentary track with producer Jerome Hellman. Three separate documentaries, including After Midnight, reflecting on the classic 35 years later documentary, controversy and acclaimed documentary, a celebration of director John Schlesinger, and a photo gallery which has a lot of black and white still shots from the set, some publicity photos, a few in color, but nothing really special there. And probably the most impressive thing about the film is the 5.1 soundtrack. Now, many of you who collected the very first edition of Midnight Cowboy when it was released by MGM a few years back know that it had a 4.0 mix. Well, this time, they've revamped it and gone one better. It's 5.1. It sounds pretty good, but maybe not as clean as the 4.0. I don't know if they did some tweaking with the music or whatever, but for the most part, it's pretty faithful to the original. Now, purists will be happy to know that the original mono track has been included as well. And for people in the audiences of France and Puerto Rico, you'll be happy to know that there are French and Spanish stereo tracks for your listening pleasure. So, Shane, I got to ask you, you were born like 10,000 years after this movie came out. How did you feel about Midnight Cowboy?
Well, it only came out 7 years before I was born, and 25 years if you really want to get technical about it before I was allowed to watch it. But yes, this was my first viewing, and I must say, the chemistry between Hoffman and Voight was amazing. The movie itself was a little bizarre for me, but that's what won it an Oscar, right?
I would think so. I mean, there are certain aspects that may be dated to younger people like yourself. But, you know, and about the only really weak part of the movie is that psychedelic freak-out thing, you know, the party. Remember that part?
I don't know how you could forget that scene. That was probably one of the most messed-up scenes in the entire movie.
Yeah, I mean, it was just, you know, it's time and everything like that, and I'm willing to bet that most audiences today will still get a kick out of that, especially, you know, Hoffman just keeps going, you know, hey, take your hands off of me, take your hands off of me, take your hands. It was just so wild and weirdly filmed, but, you know, even with the shortcomings that some people, you know, problems people may have with it, the heart of the story is the relationship between these two characters. I mean, you got this Texas good old boy and this, you know, East Coast born, you know, con guy, and yet they're able to meet in the middle and, you know, help each other in what is pretty, you know, well, I can't speak for New York now, but the way it looked back as depicted in this film, the New York of 1969 before Disney came in and cleaned it up, you know, it just sounded like it really wasn't the place to be unless you knew somebody.
Well, that's an aspect that I really can't speak to, having never been to New York.
It's also got some really amazing performances, or supporting performances, I mean, by Sylvia Miles, the very first woman that Joe nails when he hits the Big Apple. And she was nominated for an Oscar for that particular part. I can't remember who she lost to, but she got nominated for an Academy Award. And I think it's time of a gif that Brenda Vaccaro, the woman that Joe sleeps with toward the end of the movie, I thought she did a fantastic job as well.
She did have a fantastic role, but I do believe that Sylvia Miles' performance was a little bit better.
So you're saying for the 30 and over, or slightly over crowd, or maybe 30 and under, do you think that they will find this film relative, or at least entertaining, to give it at least a rental?
Such a hard question to answer. Everybody's tastes are a little bit different when it comes to films. But I would recommend everybody see it. You do want to see any movie that's won an Oscar. There has to be a reason for it.
And despite its bizarreness, I do recommend Midnight Cowboy.
Yeah, definitely. So, for those of you who have the original MGM release, you can use it as a coaster now. I highly recommend that you pick up the two-disc collector's version of Midnight Cowboy. No collection should be without it. Shane, I know you've got a title that is very big on the mind of Oscar voters, and you're going to take a look at it right now. As a matter of fact, we're going to listen to some of it right now. Listen. Thank you.
one man changed the face of country music forever with freight train chords, steel-eyed intensity, and a voice as dark as night. The Man in Black.
Hello. I'm Johnny Cash.
Cash's music transcended the mainstream flow and could be considered rock, gospel, blues, and rockabilly, and is one of 10 recording artists to be inducted into both the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame and the Country Music Hall of Fame. And coming to DVD in one of the shortest release windows in the history of the format is Walk the Line, starring Joaquin Phoenix as the music legend and Reese Witherspoon as June Carter. Not being a fan of Johnny Cash, I didn't know what to expect from this biopic, but now I can honestly say that I was blown away. Typically, most DVD reviewers don't get drawn into a film to the point where you actually stop reviewing the DVD, and that's what happened to me when I was watching Walk the Line. However, it's a shame that the film barely scratches the surface of one of the most influential careers in music, but it still works as a love story, and the performances in the movie are brilliant. Joaquin Phoenix and Reese Witherspoon are incredible, and it's been noticed. They both won Golden Globes for Best Actor and Actress in a Comedy or Musical, and big surprise, they're both in the running for Oscars in their respective categories. Joaquin is able to draw you into his character so that you start caring for him and want to see him succeed. I also have to say that this is Witherspoon's best performance of her career. Sure, she's been fun in romantic comedies like Sweet Home Alabama and Just Like Heaven, but here she proves she can do more than that. And as for the vocal performances, well, I was blown away. Phoenix and Witherspoon did their own singing, and Joaquin in particular sounded almost exactly like Johnny Cash. And you'll hear just how well their vocals are when you listen to the two marvelous audio tracks provided by Fox Home Entertainment. Walk the Line's soundtrack pounded all my speakers all the time in both the Dolby Digital 5.1 and the DTS 5.1 track. You get enveloped in the music and you feel as though you're at a concert with these characters. The Dolby track came up a little short, especially during some dialogue sequences that seemed slightly muffled to me, like almost when somebody's speaking into their chest. Visually, the film looks fantastic. Presented in 2.35:1 anamorphic widescreen, there is some noticeable grain, however, during the opening sequence depicting Johnny Cash's boyhood years, but it clears up once it hits older Johnny leaving the farm, which leads me to believe this was done intentionally. Every other aspect of the picture looked fantastic. Unfortunately, I only received the single disc edition for review, and as such, can't discuss any of the bonus features found on that two disc set. However, unlike many cases like this where the cheaper version is bare bones, this one includes both an informative commentary track with director James Mangold and 10 deleted scenes, which in my opinion were wisely cut and didn't add all that much extra value to the film. Jeff, I'll tell ya, I'll be definitely going out to pick up the two-disc special edition when it comes out this coming Tuesday the 28th, just for the extra material. I love the movie and I want that extra stuff.
Well, sir, you're one up on me because I didn't even get a review copy, and in the words of Johnny Cash, or a famous Johnny Cash song, I feel busted, but hopefully I'll get a chance to look at it. Matter of fact, we'll probably talk about it more on our upcoming Oscar show, but it sounds to me, but I will tell you, I did see it in the theater, so I can talk about it. Huge Johnny Cash fan, and it sounds like you had a similar reaction that I did. You kind of wanted more about the music and maybe a little bit more about the man. Am I correct?
I definitely wanted more. This is the type of picture that I personally feel could have a follow-up, a sequel to it, and that's rare for a biopic.
You know, a book that I want to recommend to everybody out there listening is Johnny Cash. I think it's called Cash, the Autobiography. And there are so many stories in that book, which this script was partially, the script partially used this particular book for material in the movie, but there were just so many stories I wish they could have depicted. But, you know, at the heart of it all, it's meant to be a love story, you know, and that's what it is. And I'm sure if Johnny were around today, that's what he would have wanted this movie to focus on, the tremendous love that he and June had for one another. And it is very sweet. It's very well played by both of them.
It certainly is, and something I discovered after watching the film, one of my favorite scenes was the proposal scene, was the fact that it really did take place on a stage, and it took place in London, Ontario, which is just about 6 hours from where I live.
Oh, really?
Really, and in fact, Fox Home Entertainment in Canada is having a reunion party in London, Ontario for the launch of the DVD.
Are you going to try and check it out or what?
Unfortunately, I will not be able to attend, but I do have the opportunity to interview a couple of folks who were there live when Johnny proposed to June.
Sorry for the interruption, folks, but I got to ask June here a question before we finish this song. Will you marry me?
Well, I'm sorry that you only got the single disc, but are you aware of what's on the second disc for those that may want to take that option?
Everything that you can find on this edition that we just looked at is available on the two-disc special edition, as well as three extended music videos, a Passion of MIB featurette, and a Walk the Line comeback featurette.
So basically, you're saying that you love the single disc version, and it impressed you so much that you're definitely going to grab the two-disc version. Would you say that would be the thing to do for people that really love the music of Johnny Cash as much as I do?
For fans of the late, great Johnny Cash, I definitely recommend the two-disc edition well over the single-disc edition, even though I didn't get a chance to look at the extras on that DVD.
And Fox Home Entertainment, if you're monitoring, send me a copy. Shane, this episode of DVD Marquee is ever-expanding, and I think you have the equivalent of a breaking news story in the form of a very special two-disc set that comes out next Tuesday. Am I correct?
You are correct, Jeffrey. Now, I just received this title a couple of hours before we sat down to record this, and it's a Disney title for a classic film, a classic animated film, I should say, about doggy love. And yes, for those of you who have guessed what it is, it's Lady and the Tramp, 50th Anniversary Platinum Special Edition DVD. And unfortunately, I only received this DVD a couple of hours before we sat down to record this podcast, which didn't give me enough time to go through all the extra material on the DVD. I barely had enough time to watch it and give it a listen. Now, most of you Disneyites out there will agree that Disney rarely falters when it comes to these animated classics. And the case is true with this title as well. It's beautiful. If I were watching it for the first time today, my guess would have been that it was drawn just recently. It looks absolutely fantastic, and the home theater mix that Disney threw on here for 5.1 audio is magnificent. It really does make you believe that this is a brand new film.
Well, Shane, I'm a very big Disney fan myself, and I bought the original Bare Bones single disc, I think it was about 3 or 4 years ago, and it sounds like they have given the same treatment that they have to Lion King, Toy Story, and all those great animated classics that come in two-disc form, and I'm very excited. Matter of fact, I found out just hours ago that I will be getting my own copies, so on the very our very next show, we'll both be able to get a better grip on this, but I gotta tell you, even sight unseen, I think it's gonna be a must-have for anybody that loves classic animation, especially about, as you said in your words, doggy love.
For sure. And it's been cleaned up so much that I can hardly recognize the movie from the way that it used to look to the way it looks now.
You know, I'm not sure if I sold mine in a fit of eBay neediness, but I do recall that it was widescreen. It was like a 255 aspect ratio or something like that. It wasn't that bad, but I could tell that maybe it could have been spiffed up a little bit. And it sounds like it's just going to be along the lines of Snow White, and I can't tell you how much I'm looking forward to, and it comes out next Tuesday, right?
Yes, sir. Come February 28th, you will be able to pick up The Lady and the Tramp at your favorite retailer. Earlier in the DVD Marquee, we'd mentioned David Cronenberg. Now, in a complete 180 from a classic film, we're going right into a brand new film that isn't as cuddly. I'm going to turn it over to you, Jeffrey. Take it away.
Man, I never thought that I would see the day when I'd be co-hosting a radio program when we went from a Disney movie to a David Cronenberg flick, but that's the wonderful modern-day world of podcasting for you. Anyway, New Line was very nice enough to send me a way, way, way in advance copy of A History of Violence, a movie that made over 150 top 10 lists from critics all over the world. And sometimes when a movie has so much hype, sometimes you're setting yourself up to be disappointed. But let me tell you, friends, if you haven't seen this movie, it does live up to advanced billing. Viggo Mortensen, who you remember from the Lord of the Rings movies, is Tom Stahl, a quiet, laid-back, almost shy diner owner in a small town called Millbrook that's almost Mayberry updated, you know? The kind of place where everybody knows everybody and how's your mama and them, and, well, maybe not that folks there. Talk about having more than a successful eatery. He's got a drop-dead, gorgeous lawyer wife named Edie, she's played by Maria Bello, and two cool kids, Sarah, a precocious little daughter, and her big brother Jack. Yes, life is good, until one fateful evening, when two drifting troublemakers come in for a late-night meal around closing time, and they're not taking no for an answer. And once the lives of his co-workers are threatened, Tom becomes like Clint Eastwood, Billy Jack, and Bruce Willis all rolled up into one economy-sized killing machine. Suddenly, Tom not only becomes a local hero, but a national one as well. Attention he'd rather not have, especially when a Philadelphia mob boss by the name of Carl Fogerty, played to perfection by Ed Harris, comes calling. Not only does he know of Tom's sudden talent for self-defense, it turns out it may not have been so sudden after all. In other words, these two have a past, and the dream existence Tom's been living for so long may soon evolve into an all-too-real nightmare. Now, Shane, I got to tell you, since the official release date for this film is not until March 13th, we're definitely going to have to talk more about this movie on a future show, but it is simply, it's the most commercial movie that Cronenberg's ever done, for starters, but at the same time, longtime fans who maybe didn't get a chance to see it in theaters are not going to be disappointed. There's a few places here and there where, you know, yep, that's Cronenberg. And it's just simply phenomenal. And it's a real, the thing that I found most interesting about it, the thought that I was trying to convey about what this movie meant to me, actually, Viggo Mortensen in the supplementary features said something that just echoed my thoughts. You know, it was almost like, you know, he was conveying what I was trying to say. And it's the fact that violence is celebrated so much that as a society we have a long way to go, and how we've become numbed by it all. You know, it's on 24 hours a day on things like CNN, Fox, and all that. And I think that's part of the message, or an underlying message that this movie is trying to convey in some form. And I found it's not only entertaining, it's shocking, it's scary, it's frightening, it's funny when you least expected. There's a couple of character developments that you won't see coming, and I could spend like maybe 30 minutes telling you about the virtue of this film, but like I said, the people that haven't seen it yet, go ahead and pre-order it now. You're going to love it.
Wow, you really seem to enjoy this movie.
Yes, I did, and I enjoyed it so much. Let me tell you an interesting story. I had meant to tell everybody about all that's included, and I'm going to do that here shortly, but I was planning to listen to the commentary track, and there's this feature on here called Acts of Violence, and I thought, oh, it's probably going to be just like a little montage of, you know, all the acts of the film, all the really violent acts of the film, you know, edited together in some little, you know, 3-minute clip. But you know what it turned out to be? It turned out to be, dig this, a 64-minute making of that may be one of the finest behind-the-scenes documentaries I've ever seen on DVD. It's just simply fantastic. You've got a lot of the principals that have worked on many a Cronin film chipping in. There's a lot of terrific B-roll footage, behind-the-scenes footage of Cronenberg, you know, just going over every detail of every shot with a little portable viewfinder. You've got people like Peter Schusitsky, and I hope I'm not butchering your name, Peter, Josh Olson, who wrote the script, virtually all the participants, all the actors, Ed Harris, Maria Bello, William Hurt, and by the way, William Hurt has been nominated for an Oscar, and let me just say, taking nothing away from William Hurt, he's great in this movie, but Ed Harris, my God, Ed Harris should have been nominated just as well. This may be, next to Apollo 13, the best role he's ever done. He's simply fantastic. I'll tell you one more thing that I have to mention about the acts of violence. There's a lot of really, well, there's no other way to say it. There's a lot of moments involving props and special effects and the way they set up certain scenes in the movie. Just a lot of wow, ooh, and cool moments. So just, you know, I can't rave enough about this documentary. But that's not the only inclusion. There are also three really well-done featurettes, Violence's History, the United States version versus the international version, and I think you'll be really surprised at how little cuts had to be made in order to qualify for ratings overseas. Just mere seconds difference, and it's just a really fascinating piece. It's not very long, probably about 2-3 minutes, but it just it's very interesting to compare, you know, what certain audiences will be exposed to in our neck of the woods and also in places like, say, Europe and what have you. Two commercial for Cannes. That's a fascinating little 8-minute behind-the-scenes tour of Cronenberg and the cast as they prepare to meet the press and attend the premiere of the film at the Cannes Film Festival. And there's also a deleted scene involving Ed Harris's character that I don't want to give anything away about. And there's also a behind-the-scenes feature on this particular scene that got cut called The Unmaking of Scene 44. And what impressed me about this particular bit is how much work went into preparing a scene that never saw the light of day. Just all the hours, time, days, angles for naught, but it just shows you sometimes, you know, for the betterment of a movie or to make it tighter, sometimes something's got to go. But it's still a very interesting look at how much work goes into a scene that never made the light of day.
I'll tell you, Jeffrey, the way you're raving about this film and the DVD itself, if I don't get it, I'll definitely be picking it up the day it comes out.
It comes out on March 14th, and hopefully, Shane, we're going to be able to get you a copy before our next show or our next couple shows, because I think it's something that we'll really have a lot of fun talking about. I think it's the best movie that Cronenberg has ever done, and I've seen a lot of his work, but this is probably, it's not just commercial, it's also an excellent piece of filmmaking. So, A History of Violence, March 14th, mark it on your calendar, folks, and by the way, it's already in the running to be one of my top 10 DVDs of 2006. And that is going to about do it for episode number 3 of the DVD Marquee. By the way, on a personal note, I want to thank Shane and everybody behind the scenes of the show. As Shane told you last time, my older brother Kenny passed away rather suddenly, and I just wanted to take a moment to pay tribute to him. He was not only my big brother, but he was my closest friend. He was a fellow movie buddy. His favorite movie was Rio Bravo. And I just want to say, completely off the cuff, that before he did die, we had a chance to talk about this project of mine, the show that Shane and I are now doing, and he was fully behind it. And I'm only sorry that he didn't get a chance to hear it before he did pass on, but he was very excited about it. And I would like to dedicate this particular show and every future episode to the memory of my brother, Kenny Heron.
Well said, Jeffrey. Now, before we wrap up this week's episode of the DVD Marquee, Jeffrey and I have a question we'd like to pose to you. We're wondering, how would you like it if we included short podcasts covering a single title? They last about 5 to 6 minutes each. The reason why we're wondering this is we are located in different countries, and that sometimes makes it difficult for us to coordinate our titles for the podcast. The advantage to this is that we'd be able to get more reviews out to you, our listeners.
Send us your thoughts. We'd love to hear about them. And I can't wait for show number 4. Shane, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Always a pleasure, Jeffrey.
So, Shane, I'm going to go ahead and let you do the honors of telling everybody that we need to thank for giving us the bandwidth and all that groovy stuff. I'll turn it over to you for the big finish here.
And with that, it's time to put down the mic on another edition of the DVD Marquee on HTF Radio, sponsored by the Home Theater Forum in collaboration with iCraveDVD.com. Join us in weeks to come for more in-depth analysis on the latest and most anticipated DVD offerings. Plus, keep an eye out for our very first Oscar special coming to a podcast near you. So until next time, for Jeffrey Rosato and the rest of the DVD Marquee crew, I'm Shane McDonald. Thanks for listening.
Big Bub, with a little help from Howard Hawks, Dean Martin, and Ricky Nelson. This is for you.
The cattle go down to the stream. The red wing settles in her nest. It's time for a cowboy to dream. Purple eyes in the canyon, that's where I long to be with my three good companions. Just my rifle, pony, and me gonna hang my sombrero on the limb of a tree. Coming home, sweetheart darling, just my rifle, pony, and me.
Whippoorwill in the willow sings a sweet melody.
Riding to Amarillo,
Amarillo,
just my rifle, pony, and me.
No more cow,
no more cow
to be roping,
to be roping.
No more stray,
no more stray.
Will I see
round the bend,
round the bend?
She'll be waiting,
she'll be waiting
for my rifle, pony.